Truman's hats or JFK cigarette box? This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Which Utahn will get drafted to the Trump administration? This is Dan McKay on the right.
Political turkeys, who are they out there? This is a special Thanksgiving edition of Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. But first, this news. Good morning. I am Natalie Gochner. I am pleased to join you today on Both Sides of the Aisle, and I have with me on the political right, Representative Dan McKay.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
And on the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
I'm not going to prove I'm a turkey.
Look, it's Thanksgiving morning. Hey. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah, except on the rerun. Start there.
It helps for the podcast for people to know what time we were, you know, sitting around thinking about this stuff.
That's right.
Makes sense. Hey, Jim, I learned over the past week that Mr. Dan is some sort of a Renaissance man. He does a lot of things. He cycles. He does different things. But he, like, puts up woodworking in his in his entryway of his home.
Oh, yeah.
So the craftsman, Dan McKay. Are you good with your hands, Jim?
I have to go to full-service gas pumps.
Okay.
I mean, that's where I am. And, of course, Natalie's husband is one of the premier woodworkers in the United States of America.
I've started following his stuff because he is actually very well-known, and I didn't know this until...
He is. You know, if you can imagine it, he can build it. So.
Yeah. And my wife, she knows the perfect recipe. What she does is she'll say, look, all you got to do is tell me how to get started, and then I'll do the project. And before you know it, my whole Saturday is gone and I'm absorbed in the project.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I love it because of the singularity of the task and gets me my brain off everything
else. You bet. Therapy. Hey, guys. Thanksgiving week, we should talk about political turkeys. And I don't know if you guys have on your list some political turkeys, but I sure do. Steve Bannon is at the top of my list.
I'm going to start making a list right now.
Making a list. Checking it twice. Steve Bannon, who is to be the... senior advisor,
strategist for the United States of America.
Job.
Yeah, the brain of the president.
Right.
And he's a turkey in my mind because of his association with so many things that are so offensive to me. So how about you, Dan?
You continue to be offended by this presidency thus far.
Yeah, and I've been taking lots of lumps for it.
We need some kind of healing session for you. Is it up at the university? Is it really tough with the Trump presidency?
You know where it's tough for me is with women. Hmm. So that's the marginalized group that I'm a part of. I'm sure other marginalized groups have their thing. And you know what? I'm over it in the sense that I'm excited about what can happen. I just want to see good behavior moving forward.
You know, respect is earned. Respect just doesn't come because somebody says they deserve respect. And Donald Trump has got to earn the respect of the American people. And so far, this candidate who is going to deal and defeat ISIS is now at war with Saturday Night Live and a Broadway musical. I mean, he's going to have to earn this respect. And that means grow up, run the country, and get away from being a reality TV star. He's going to have to go there, or he's never going to get the respect he needs to do the job.
Dan, he's asking Saturday Night Live to be fair in their coverage. Where's that coming from?
Well, in his defense, there is a lot more ribbing and poking of Saturday Night Live type events of the right.
Yeah, sure.
And maybe it's because it's easier to make fun of the old-fashioned values type of deal.
So he's earning some of my respect by calling in a rival and political enemy in Mitt Romney, in some sense, and saying, come talk with me. Let's see where we have similarities. And I'm proud of Mitt Romney for going.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, I want to hear your analysis
okay,
of it because
so I've been
everyone's
about
debating
this
whether,
week.
You know, Mitt should have even gone and is he being set up like the president of Mexico or is this just a sign of his patriotism?
Yeah. No, I think it is a sign of Mitt's patriotism.
That would
right?
be fitting for the man.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, if the president or the president-elect calls you and says, may I meet with you, you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's patriotism. You do your duty. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter who you are, what station in life, you show up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what party, any of that stuff. I will say that I think it's kind of an ultimate kind of frustrating point, in my opinion, or doesn't show. I'm sure it shows well for Trump because I think he just is inviting Mitt to make it look like he gets all this credit for inviting Mitt up to the White House or up to, you know, up to his
Trump Tower,
Trump Towers. But then he's going to go a different direction.
So you would have gone if you were Mitt, and then you think he's going to go a different direction.
If I was in Hawaii, I would jump on. I would do that 12-hour flight with no second thoughts and do it for my country.
I'll be interested how much persuasion Michael Pence has on this decision.
Look, there's two ways to look at this. There's the Dan way. And then there's a complete cynic way that says...
Wait, I thought mine was pretty cynical.
It was.
No, that one. Wait till you hear mine.
You're going to out-cynic
And that
me?
Is, when you go back and listen to what Mitt Romney said about Donald Trump at the Hinckley Institute, there is no room.
Zero room.
There is no room. That he said the man is as worthless as a degree from Trump University, and that was one of the more pleasant things. Mm-hmm. So when someone you describe of that character asks you to join the team, it probably is one thing, an overriding ambition that is just unquenshable. Because
that
people
Mitt
would
has,
say,
saying,
yeah,
like
that a man.
No way.
There would be those
okay,
who
you're
would
right.
say.
That is more cynical.
There would be those who would say that it is only this blind ambition that could allow you to work for that kind of a person and be a subordinate.
And I would say that Governor Romney is just good enough in his character that he would do it to help our country and to help this president succeed.
Yep.
And Dan, I think you're saying the odds are against this. Do you think Giuliani gets that pick for Secretary of State?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know who gets it instead, right?
Think Giuliani. You just don't think it goes to Governor Romney.
Giuliani's been there, right, at the whole time. And so I think it's hard for – I don't take Trump to be the kind of guy who is a team of rivals guy.
Interesting.
Right? He's a loyalty guy.
This is why I bring up Mike Pence, because I think Pence is symbolizes the goodness in this administration. I realize, Jim, you have some issues with him and others might on the left, but he's no Donald Trump. Is that fair enough?
That's fair enough.
Okay.
But if I were talking to Mitt, I would say you have a buffoonery position in the White House, and you have a national security advisor who is the person traditionally – that goes to war with the Secretary of State. And it's a long way from Foggy Bottom to the Oval Office, which is where the National Security Advisor is. And you got a lot more on your platter when you're Secretary of State. So you don't get the last word very often. And you might be setting yourself up for a very, very, very difficult time, as have many a Secretary of State who didn't share the same philosophy as the National Security Advisor.
Let's go to one more before we go to the break. You keep hearing our Speaker of the House, Greg Hughes, come up as a potential Secretary of Transportation. He has a long history working on transportation issues, including his work with our Utah Transit Authority. I don't see this happening, guys. But it'd be good to hear from you, Mr. McKay, because you are a colleague of his in the House and close friends.
Yeah, I would. Honestly, I know exactly what you know. When I talked to Greg about it, I brought it up when I was with him the other day, and he said, look, I don't know about – he's like, I'm not thinking about that. I'm not working on that. He's thinking about Utah issues. We were in caucus the other day, and he was focused on Utah issues. My feeling is I don't get the feeling that he's – if he's – you know, his name's being thrown around, right? And I know in Utah we want to see one of our Utah people go on to bigger things. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how it happens. I'll say this, though. I want to be wrong.
You'd love it if you were there.
I'd love it.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you guys think it's such a long shot? There aren't very many conservative Republicans that know anything about transportation. They all oppose it. They all hate it. Hughes has been there nationally. I think, unlike you, Dan, I think there's a 90% shot he's going to do it. And also, like you, I want to kick off the McKay for Speaker right here and right now, because we're going to have to get that rolling soon as Greg announces he's gone.
A list of things that won't happen.
Yeah. To me, Jim, the reason I'm sort of a negative about it is I just think there's a lot of more prominent people that would take that position, whether they be a governor or a sitting member of Congress.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm seeing it. Hey, in our next segment, we'll talk more about political turkeys. Happy Thanksgiving. This is Both Sides of the Aisle.
Jim DeBacchus, happily on the left, full of tryptophan and other drugs.
Shall we be drug testing for the show, Jim? This is Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and I'm friends with these guys. Hey, Jim, we were talking at the break. You went to the musical Beautiful, the Carole King history.
You know, it's hard to describe how amazing an event is to go down to that new theater and to see it and watch people come from all over and to sit down there in a darkened theater and watch the world unfold. That was such an amazing show with great performances and so professional. I just think this whole theater is such a plus to our state and to our community, and it's going to be there for many, many, many years to come.
Pretty neat. Dan, I know you didn't have a chance to go to this performance. You've been in the theater. When you go on the intermission, and I went to the performance, it was great, and it was so neat to see millennials in there listening to Carole King music, because there's just something that it just crossed the ages or something.
Sure.
But during the break, everyone talks about the Zion ceiling or whatever the name is for that. Have you looked at that?
I haven't had a
theater?
Chance to see the new implementation of the Zion ceiling.
To those listening who haven't seen it, you don't realize what we're talking about until you're in that grand theater and you have to look down upon the Zion ceiling, because it's got this grand atrium.
Yeah.
And normally you wouldn't have to have a ceiling, but there's balconies where people can look over the liquor being served.
And the geniuses from the DABC came right before that opened and decided that the cracks were too big and children might be able to be on the balcony and watch a drink being mixed. So in they had to go at who knows how much cost to satisfy these people at the DABC. I'm proud to say, the only senator to vote against the confirmation of the executive director of the DABC. And I couldn't be more proud. It was a 24-1 vote, and I was so pleased to be able to vote against him, because I think this is a $400 million a year business, and it is run like Bonzo hour. It's just a catastrophe, the monopoly of the DABC. It's like communist Soviet Russia.
I'm making this way too easy for Jim today, Dan. Just picking all his little touch points.
And I'm in kind of one of those moods where I'm just ready to just let him go.
Let him go.
It's like, well, we've wound him. I know, I'm not there.
Oh, man. Okay, I withdraw all those comments. McKay isn't up to it then.
Sorry, DABC is run marvelously.
Okay, that's good.
We have no problem.
Let's try on this one.
Government interfering with the market.
This would be a hot button for Jim, but let's try you on it first just to see what you think. We have this Secretary of State from Kansas who was an advisor to the Trump administration on immigration policy. And he's got in his thinking in the past the notion of requiring Muslims to register.
Yeah.
It feels like Topaz all over, for those that remember the Utah internment camp for the Japanese during World War II. Where do you come at that one? Or is this just another giveaway I'm giving to Jim?
Oh, man. It stinks that these are our best ideas.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they're so bad for
they're bad. One.
Yeah.
But two, it's not like we haven't seen how this plays out in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When you marginalize the people, you label them, you put them in a second class citizenry type of deal, it just gets ugly for
And it becomes one of your biggest black eyes, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. And then history regrets it and doesn't look favorably on it. I mean, the list goes on and on. But that's okay, because I think what they're trying to do is the right intent. And I don't know that you can never just let the ends justify the means.
Mm-hmm.
But, while they're spitballing ideas, apparently this was one that was spitballed. While they're spitballing ideas, the idea that they have that is, I think, a shared objective by everyone in the country is we've got to find a way to prevent radicalized, whatever religion it might be, from attacking innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a shared objective we all can agree on. And how we do it, you can castigate one idea or another, and I guess we can make public some of those spitballing ideas. But what I would say is, let's see what comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's actually give a chance to try and be focused on solving the problem instead of castigating every idea that comes out of somebody's mouth.
Yeah. Jim, do you want to add something on that one?
If that's the if that's the idea that these dumb ideas come out, they ought to be castigated when they're out. This is an idea that's out. And I call on all Utahns who get pompous about this mm-hmm. and smug about religious liberty. Mm-hmm. That is their big thing for a lot of Utahns, for a lot of LDS mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. We hear it from the pulpit. We hear it from the church. My question is religious liberty only for popular religions? Mm-hmm. Or when we talk about religious liberty, are we saying that if you are a Muslim and you're put on a list and you have to report to the police, are we going to be as vigilant in standing up as an attack on religious liberty for that as we are for some mythical baker that doesn't want to cook for a gay couple? That's where the rubber meets the road on religious liberty. It's when it's a not the most popular religion that is being persecuted. I want to hear that uproar from Utah if this becomes a real proposition, because that's the test of where you really stand on religious liberty.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually really agree with that.
Do the right thing even when,
Yeah. That's the problem is...
I'm going home.
I know.
Hey, let's go to something that's less, along ideological.
You're just no fun.
But you're right. I mean, that's the thing.
I've never heard that.
The left is right here.
I'm not telling anybody.
When the left is right. Hey, guys, here's one that doesn't fall so much along ideological lines, but just serving this community. But we have need for new homeless shelters, and we understand that they're very close to announcing the locations of 4 new homeless shelters. And I'd just love to get your two takes on this.
One's next to the mansion.
Yeah, my home on South Temple.
let's make it hit home, right?
Here's my question. So all 4 of these are going to be in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And my question is, why isn't every Class 1 city, a part of this solution? Like a certain size gives you certain advantages in life, and one of them is you have to take responsibility for the homeless population. So that would put West Valley City in this category, Provo, Borderline, Orem, Sandy.
They don't want to be.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
so we put 5 in Salt Lake City.
Yeah. I mean, that's the – well, and Salt Lake City is the – I mean, believe it or not – there are services available outside of Salt Lake City. However, people still choose to congregate here.
Yeah. Jim, I ride my bike all the time on the Jordan River Parkway and done it for years. And it's only been in the last few months that you're seeing all this camping out on the parkway of homeless people, that have been displaced either from the downtown homeless shelter or displaced from their homes and jobs.
I think we need to be incredibly careful about what's happening.
Mm-hmm. It's crisis.
That's Syria on 500 West. There's no reason to believe that we're not going to be creating 5 little Syrias. And instead of having the problem dispersed, which if it works right is going to be what happens. And every part of me wants it to work. But have we really looked at the flip side of that, which is we take 5 thriving, healthy neighborhoods and we create these homeless mm-hmm. situations with their crime and with all of the issues in neighborhoods in Sugar House or on the East Bench or in the Avenues or in Central City? Is it possible that we're going to exacerbate the problem? The state's chipped in $9 million for the next 3 years. That ain't diddly squat. Who's going to pay for all this on an ongoing basis? This is, I hope that our good city and county council people have a hold on this, or we may see serious, serious problems.
Dan, do you see a bigger role for the state looking forward?
I think the obligation is shared. I mean, mm-hmm. the problem I keep having, and I've had this conversation with many that are close to the issue, and I'm not one of mm-hmm. those. But as I've had conversations with many, the concern I always bring up, or that I'm always kind of watchful of, is, a couple of years ago, we rolled out and declared that we had solved homelessness and that we had declared a long-term end to homelessness and Utah had the solution. We are not 2 years after that proclamation. Mm-hmm. And here we have discovered that we've created a crisis for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right.
And even the solution that we celebrated, additional housing became, instead of them doing things out in the open, they're doing them behind closed doors.
Yeah.
There's as much drug problems and dependencies.
And we have created more problems than we've solved with our solution. And so I think a lot of people ought to be watching cautiously about the incentives that we're creating. Because, again, people will continue to follow incentives. Mm-hmm. Homeless, not homeless, you know, wealthy executive, doesn't matter. Everybody follows incentives. And I think you create the wrong incentives, i.e., you know, everybody has free housing for an unlimited amount of time and they become dependent upon that.
Yeah.
You create the same problems.
There was a time in public policy where everyone wanted to get to the root cause. That was a trendy thing.
Yeah,
a popular,
right.
I mean, a positive trend to right. get to the root cause. And that's one of my complaints about homelessness policy interventions is we're not getting down to the root cause of the problem. More to come.
Well, and isn't the problem, and I think this is what a lot of people are quickly understanding. One, we have discovered out of that root cause movement, I think, a long-lapsing mental health issue,
mm-hmm.
right? And
that
mental health issue is growing, and it's not something we have control of, uh-huh. number one.
And then you go to, you know, problems with third-grade reading.
Right.
Goes that far back.
Education levels,
you go
right?
back to, you know, family problems.
Mm-hmm. And then there is a class of people who actually prefers that lifestyle.
Right.
They
Absolutely.
Want to be unplugged, and that's their thing.
Yeah.
And whether or not that's acceptable is a whole other issue.
It didn't get the headlines. It ties into this, Natalie, I think, though. But last week, during the interim, one of the issues just smashed me like a right hook was the announcement that we're going to end up with a $105 million bill to educate over 10,000 new students that the state hadn't been planning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Natalie's Institute that came up with those numbers. And I don't know whether to hug her or to be repulsed. I mean, if you say now that next year alone, we have to come up with $105, $107 million, and that's just above the line costs, for educating 10,000 kids that we hadn't expected. So we pay over $100 million, and we're still at square one. We haven't improved anything. Where are we going to come up with the money, Mr. Revenue and Tax Chair?
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of serious conversations as these costs continue to escalate. To
yeah.
Jim's point, right, is $9 million enough to solve the problem?
Yeah.
Answer's no.
Well, and every time you create a job, every time you give an incentive for more jobs to be here, you create a cost for society as
yeah.
well. And you have to balance those. Every you know, family-supporting job typically has a family in the school system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, guys, we are running out of time, and I just can't help. I didn't tell you we were going to do this because we usually do a gripe, but I think we should share a Thanksgiving tradition, story, something you're grateful for, something that warms the heart of our listeners. And, Dan, you've had the most mellow, sort of pleasant demeanor today. Let's go to you first.
I'm concerned that Natalie thinks I've been pleasant. I need to really kind of up my pleasant game, it seems like.
You have a tradition in the McKay family that
yeah,
you'll follow?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's our Christmas or our Thanksgiving always is more like Festivus with the airing of grievances and, you know, some interesting stories.
Sounds like the Republican caucus.
So, you know, I was telling one of my coworkers this morning, there's always something interesting comes, right, with
yeah.
Thanksgiving. And I won't share those things. I will say this. I love to be with family in the holidays. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it.
Do you time out over the next, you know, few days for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I mean,
you leave work behind. And
work behind.
Politics
everything else.
Behind.
Yeah, that's right. And I try and time everything at work as best I can to avoid uh-huh. serious deadlines on this week
yeah.
or serious deadlines a week of, you know, the Christmas holiday. And I literally try and do my best to leave everything else behind, turn my phone off, and just try and be dad. And
you've
husband.
Got six.
I've got six kids
to be dad
and
to.
You know it's
yeah, that's wonderful.
It's a big deal. So, anyways, I love my family, and if you're listening,
happy Thanksgiving to
happy
the McKay family.
Yep.
Okay, Mr.
Yeah, no great stories. I'm going to go where Stephen and I are go where we've gone for the last 25 years to Nick Nero's and Doug Wortham's house, and there'll be a strange group of misfits of which we are part, and it'll be fine. The thing will warm your heart. Stephen said, I collect some political memorabilia, and there was an auction, and there was two possibilities. It was two of Harry Truman's hats, his actual hats, and JFK's cigarette case. And Stephen said, what do you want for Christmas? You know, which of those would you take? The haberdashery's hats or the actual cigarette case that was apparently in the Oval Office, the president, with the seal of the president on it. And I said, give me the hats. And he called later and said, the hats went for $40,000. What else do you want? So that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, very good. You know, in the Gochner family, both my parents have passed. And so for me, I'm a maiden name's Egan, but I'll be with the Gochners on Thanksgiving. And I have the assignment to make a big pot of dressing for about 50 people. We have a big family. So I'll be cooking and eating and watching family films.
What's in there? Do you put like the guts of stuff in there?
There's stuffing and
giblets
dressing.
And all that.
I have dressing as my assignment because I'm not cooking the turkey, so I can't stuff anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So mine's we have a lot of spices in it, but it'll be good. One thing you're grateful for, Dan, before we sign off.
I love the state of Utah.
Okay.
I really,
you really do. I mean, you're saying this authentically.
I honestly am grateful we live here.
Jim?
We have our problems.
Yeah. But you love the Beehive State.
You know, one of the things I'm grateful for, I love doing this radio show every week. I love talking to all the people out there. I love meeting with my friends. I love talking about stuff.
And I love our producer, Ross Chambliss, who makes this program so great.
Total cop out.
You've joined me with Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Happy Thanksgiving.